Neither team's scared. Neither team's going to be afraid to go out there and do what they do. That's why this matchup is so juicy, and I can't wait for it. What is up, everybody? Thank you for joining us on today's episode here at Crane & Cone. And today's show is brought to you by our friends over at Good Ranchers. Head over to goodranchers.com. I'm going to tell you a little bit more about them as we get into it. But we got one game left, fellas. David Cone, former Michigan quarterback. Blaine Crane, former Western State Colorado wide receiver. And I think it's going to end up being a banger. I just think the main thing I want to start out with, because I want to ask you guys, what matchup are you looking forward to the most, from whether it's personnel, whether it's position group, whatever. I just want to go ahead and put this out here. As unbelievable as Indiana has looked, and they have looked damn near unstoppable up to this point, Miami can win this game.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this isn't a mountain versus a molehill situation. I think Miami can play well, and Indiana can play well, and Miami can win this game. So I'm going to go ahead, and this isn't going to be one of those previews where it's just everything about Indiana is just always going to be awesome, this, that, or the other. Miami's ass got here, too, and they can do some things that can disrupt and ruin everything. So I want to throw that out there. But, Coney, what matchup are you looking forward to the most when you know, looking at this game and these teams?
Well, it's got to be Fernando Mendoza against this Miami defense. I mean, he's the Heisman Trophy winner. Like I told you guys last week, I get serious Andrew Luck vibes from the kid, the way he approaches the game, and really with this throwing motion and some things that he does down the field with the football. But and then up against this Miami defense, when you talk about Keontae Scott and Bain and Mesidor, I mean, some of the best football players in the country are on that side of the football. But just from a high-level perspective, I mean, let's just think about what we have here. We have an Indiana Hoosiers team that is undefeated, number one, trying to be the first 16-0 team in this sport, 50 years, mind you, to the year after their basketball team went undefeated under Bobby Knight. And really, they're one of the they were a laughingstock of this sport for a long time. One of the losingest programs in the history of this sport has a chance to go 16-0 against a blue blood brand in Miami who really has been wandering the wilderness of mediocrity for 25 years. It's been a quarter century since they were the most dominant football program in the country when I was growing up in the early 2000s. And now look at them. I mean, we have an awesome matchup here. And from the Indiana perspective, you know, like, it's been an unbelievable story, but I think people have finally moved on from the brand bias after they beat the Buckeyes, certainly after they beat Alabama. But now, after what they've done to Oregon, people are finally saying, oh, forget what's on the helmet. This is a very good football team, not just a good football story. Does that mean they're unbeatable? Absolutely not. And I'll just say the same thing to Miami fans that I said to Oregon fans last week. No one is picking you and no one is pulling for you. No one's picking you because they think Indiana's better. No one's pulling for you because they think Indiana's the better story. Just embrace that. You're playing in the first national title in a quarter century at home in the 305. What a great opportunity to get back on top of this sport.
And Blaine, I don't think Miami is foreign or afraid of being the hated team. I mean, hell, they built their brand up on being hated. This is kind of I think they want to be the villain. Some guys just want to be the villain. And I think Miami's that team and really that brand. But when you look at the matchups, what's the line? What's the total on it? Let's go and get that out of the way, too. And then I want to know what matchup you're looking forward to the most.
Yeah, right now the line is -7.5 for Indiana. I mean, a touchdown and a hook, and the over-under I'm seeing is sitting right now at 48.5. I've seen some books have it 49.5, which I'm not surprised that number being there. When it comes to matchups, to be honest with you, I don't think they get talked about enough. I'm so excited to see this wide receiver core for Indiana go against this secondary for Miami. Mm-hmm. I mean, Omar Cooper Jr. is elite. Elijah Surratt is elite. Then you flip it on the other side. Keontae Scott has been wanting the best playoffs in the secondary, and the way they've been playing like a group. I mean, obviously Ole Miss exploited some things, but it's going to be a little bit different look for Indiana, and I can't really go back through the playoffs and not seeing a one-on-one matchup that Omar Cooper Jr. or Surratt hasn't won.
So Surratt's been balling. Surratt, Becker, like, they've been balling.
And the one thing that I don't think either of these teams get credit enough at the wide receiver, look, I get it, I was a wide receiver back in the day, but stuff like this matters to me. These two wide receiving cores are some of the best blocking wide receiving cores in the country. And that's what takes that 15-yard pass or that 15-yard run into a 40 and 50-yard touchdown pass or catch or run. So that's what a matchup I'm kind of interested in seeing. Who wins those one-on-one matchups, especially in the goal line, is going to be the difference. difference.
Well, to me, and you guys know I'm a line of scrimmage truther enthusiast here. Everybody's going to be talking about the pass rush of Miami going up against Indiana's offensive line. What I'm interested to see is you have a defensive line in Indiana in a front seven that is incredibly fundamental. They do a great job staying in their gaps. If somebody screws up, guys recognize it, they're able to read and replace. And they do the little things right to prevent you from hitting really explosive plays or chunk plays. Mm-hmm. They make you earn it down the field. But on the other side, this Miami offensive line, and I talked about the strength and conditioning coach after, you know, the Miami Ole Miss game, how just impressed I am that their offensive line can be that big and play that hard and give what looks like max effort for longer than most offensive lines. But from a fundamental standpoint with Miami on the offensive line, they are incredible at base blocks, combo blocks, getting off to the next level, getting up to linebackers, just having that feel. And then from a pass protection standpoint, they do a really, really good job communicating. That's why it feels like Carson Beck has forever back there. So you've got an unbelievably fundamental front seven on Indiana going up against an incredibly fundamental offensive line in the run and the pass. And it's not just zone run. It's not gap scheme run. It's all of it. Miami, you talk about balance. Being able to be balanced as an offensive line to mix up what you're going to do from a zone, from a gap scheme, you know, gap as in power, counter, things like that. You've obviously got pin and pull. That's the matchup. Something's got to give. Like, somebody's got to win that battle. I know one side's not going to win it every time, but that's what I'm looking forward to the most. But, you know, Blaine, I kind of want to go back with you here because, you know, when we're watching Indiana and we talked about this, on the post game, they are not reinventing the wheel offensively. It's not some new gimmick thing or whatever that's working and defenses will catch up. That would be the scariest part if I'm Coach Heatherman and this Miami defense, is that they're just really unbelievably good at making vanilla ice cream, and every now and then they'll give you a different flavor. We've seen it a couple times. We talked about the fork combo off the split zone action. We talk about the influence pulls to keep the backers one way, and Miami does that stuff too, but just from a schematic standpoint, you kind of know what you're going to get, but can you stop it? That's the difference.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I think Miami has to do, especially, I mean, up front, is you have to win first down. You have to find some way to throw Indiana out of a rhythm, because once they feel the rhythm, it's like Oppenheimer. Some people aren't good at math, but they can hear the music. Mm-hmm. Indiana can hear it, right? I don't know if they can go up there and do calculus, but they can definitely hear it, and you have to throw off that rhythm. And another thing, I mean, we go back to that Ole Miss game. I thought Mesidor and Bain, you know, really didn't get done what they wanted to get done. I mean, they come out with only one sack in that game. I know Ole Miss did a lot of quick passes, moved Trinidad, and he made some plays. But this is one of those quarterbacks, look, when Mendoza, you can try to get to him, but you have to get him on the ground, especially on third and long. And if you're Miami, if you think you can come out in this football game and have 10-plus penalties and you're going to walk away with
that's
a win, I promise you, that's not. And another big key I'm looking at, it's not even a player. It's a coach. How good of a game can Shannon Dawson call? Mm-hmm. How good? Because he, look, even with these wins, I've seen him get cute in big moments. And I understand you have Malachi Toney at receiver. He's one of your best offensive weapons. But I think Miami's at their best is when they spread the football and obviously win first down with the run. So there's going to be a lot of keys. But my biggest thing is on Miami's defense, you have to throw Indiana off on offense and you have to win first down. Make them run second and eight, second and nine, and get in those third and five plus. I know they're the best third down team in the country, but at the end of the day, you have to want something. And third and five plus, in my opinion, is a win.
Well, it's and something we've talked about since Indiana's really been playing here in the back half of the season, now in the postseason, Cone, is they don't beat themselves. And there is a beauty and an art in not losing the game. And they don't play cautious. It's not like they're going out there and just saying, you know what, we're just going to play as conservative as possible because we're not. They're making big plays, right? They're creating chaos for the other team. But the penalties, Miami cannot have four or five false starts in this game. You cannot drop four interceptions against these guys. If they show you that they can bleed, but when they do bleed, you've got to go for their throat. You've got to make them pay for it. You get in the red zone, you got to make them pay for it. Indiana turns the ball over, you got to make them pay for it. You get a chance to get 3 points with a field goal, you got to make it. That's where Miami has got to control the controllables, Cone.
Yeah, I think Sean McDonough said it best on the TV copy of the Peach Bowl. He said, when you're playing against a team that doesn't make mistakes, you can't make them yourself. And I want to get into that for Miami, but a couple things here with Indiana on offense. As if it's not enough to take on Fernando Mendoza with his ball placement and with his decision-making, throwing the football to Surratt and to Omar Cooper Jr. like you're talking about, you also have to deal with the 1-2 punch of Hemby and Black. Yeah. And like the way they run the football is just like they're just coming at you non-stop, and they can give it to you any sort of way. And they're going to run at Bane, and they're going to run at Mesidor. Jake, you're a defensive guy. We talk about it all the time. You want to slow down some pass rushers, especially pass rushers who don't come off the field a lot. Let's run the football at them a little bit and see how much they want to be in there for four straight quarters, three downs every single time. But to Blaine's point on Miami only having one sack, you know, Ole Miss had the ball for 18 minutes. You know, and that gets me into the time of possession when it comes to Miami. I mean, I just want to read a couple things off here. This is the box score from Miami taking on Ole Miss there in the Fiesta Bowl. Miami 11 of 19 on third down and 2 for 2 on fourth down. So 13 of 21. Okay. Not quite doubled you in rushing, but they rushed for 191 yards. We talk about Mark Fletcher all the time. I mean, what he's done here in the college football playoff, like MVP type stuff. 41 minute time of possession to 18 minutes. For three quarters, they were playing exactly like they needed to keep Trinidad Chambliss off the field and to run Ole Miss in this game. And yet you needed a last-second touchdown to win the game by four. Why? You had 10 penalties, to Jake's point, over double the amount of penalties that Ole Miss had, and you turned the football over in the red zone. Ole Miss didn't turn the football over at all. Plus, you missed a field goal. When you start to add all of that stuff up, that's why you're in a close game when you really shouldn't be. You can't survive like that against Indiana.
Yeah, this is like one of those tests where you basically have to get an A to pass. Like a B's probably not gonna work in this one. You've got to bring your A game, which encompasses not screwing it up. 2026 marks 250 years of America, and conversations around American culture will be front and center all year long, and also about the transfer portal. And there's nothing more American than that, as we're seeing in college athletics. But we told you about Good Ranchers a million times, but we're gonna tell you again. It is the greatest meat delivering company. It's American sourced. All right, it's not coming in from anywhere else. You go to goodranchers.com, you use our promo code Booster, you'll get an additional $25 off, and you can save up to $500 a year. David Cone, tell the people about Good Ranchers.
Step up for your family. Get some bone-in ribeyes. Get some chicken. They always got something good coming in the, what do we get, the butcher's bundle? That's what I get.
Yeah, I mean, they got chicken nuggets too, Blaine. I mean, it's well-rounded. It's like a good, it's like Indiana playing right now.
I mean, it's everything you would ever want in a meat box. I mean, I took 6 bone-in ribeyes to the hunt camp the other weekend, and I mean, those with about 6 or 7 brewskis, come on now.
Yeah. All right. So go. Make sure you go to goodranchers.com. Use our code Booster. Get that additional $25 off and save up to $500 a year. Goodranchers.com. American meat delivered. But you know, we talk about Black and Hemby. We're going to talk about Fletcher and Brown and you know these running backs. I'm trying to remember, outside of Fletcher just slipping on the turf last game, these backs do an incredible job of falling forward, too. That's why it just always seems like they're on schedule. I mean, it felt like Miami Ole Miss, that Miami was just living in second and three and second and four and could turn around and get 5 or 6 whenever they wanted to. And that's why we talk about Shannon Dawson getting cute and kind of costing them, we thought, a little bit, you know, down in the red zone the one time with Malachi Toney there. But if you're calling plays in this game, I mean, Blaine, I don't think anybody's going to change. You dance with the one that brought you. Indiana's going to be balanced. They're going to run their RPO stuff. I'm wondering how many shots Miami takes if the run game is working early off of play action. Because at some point, you have got to test Indiana vertically down the field. Sure. We saw Oregon try it a couple times, but after you throw a pick six on your first play and you're kind of – it's not working well, you're not protecting great, Dante isn't playing great. I'm wondering – honestly, if you're Miami and you were to get the ball first, I don't think a play-action shot on the first play is a bad idea, to be honest.
Well, look, as a receiver, I'm never going to sit here and say, don't throw it.
Yeah, I'm talking to a receiver and a quarterback, so I probably know the answer to this.
But I will say this. I think Miami's big plays down the field is going to have to start with the run game being successful. Indiana could just sit in too high the entire game.
Man, there's no way they can sit too high against this offensive line. There is no way.
Miami has receivers one-on-one who can win matchups. It's going to be a great battle with those Indiana DBs, but all starts with the play action game, and that starts with a successful run game. I mean, the one thing I'm looking at in this game, and this is not going to be on the stat sheet, I mean, obviously, who has the bigger motor, right? Because this is going to be four quarters of at your face. Is it Miami's defensive line or is it Indiana's offensive line? Is it Miami's offensive line or is it Indiana's defensive line? Because I promise you, I know Shannon Dawson has got cute at moments, but both these offensive coordinators want to turn around and run the football at your face, right? So it's going to be a battle of wit. It's going to be a battle of motor and who wants this shit more. That's what I see. And that's the direct culture from each of these head coaches and Mario Cristobal. I mean, obviously Kirk Cignetti's mom spaghetti.
Yeah. And both these coaches have done it a different way. You know, it's these teams have different identities that have got them here, but Cone, that kind of goes back to your point about time of possession, right? Like I know both these teams have depth, but Miami doesn't rotate a lot on the defensive line. I think the play count's going to be huge in this one in time of possession, which defense is on the field the longest, right? And that's something that could come into play. At some point, it's like an unstoppable force meets an immovable object, right? Like something's got to give.
That's my biggest key to victory here for Miami is to win time of possession. They're not going to win it 41-18 like they did against Ole Miss, but can you win time of possession against Indiana significantly while also not turning the football over and not losing the penalty battle? Because if you do that, that means you're running the football effectively, and that means that Fernando Mendoza is not on the field for a long time for Indiana. Now, they hit such explosive plays in the Peach Bowl against Oregon that their time of possession wasn't really as important. I don't think they're going to be hitting explosive plays like that left and right for four quarters against this Miami defense. So if you're winning time of possession against Indiana, it means that they're not on the football field. So that's one of the biggest things that I'm looking at. Obviously, if they can have success on third down like they were able to against Ole Miss, that's going to be another thing. Blaine talked about their wide receivers blocking. To me, it shows up especially in their tunnel screen game and their now screen game. Yeah. The touchdown Malachi Toney had, just incredible blocking downfield, the offensive line all on the same page getting out. And obviously you're going to have the stalking go game off of that, Jake, to your point about testing their DBs. That's where CJ Daniels and some of those guys really come into play. But if they call play action shot on the first play of the game and they don't hit it, is that going to call for immediate criticism of Shannon Dawson? Because I don't want to get into this place with Shannon Dawson where if he calls a really vanilla game, then he gets criticized for not thinking outside the box or trying anything. But then if he does try a flea flicker and it doesn't work or something like that, then he also gets criticized because they've hit some of those plays this season.
Well, I think it's circumstantial. Yes. Right? And that's why I typically try and wait till at least halftime or into the second half before I comment on social media about the play calling. Cause I got to see, you got to call the game the way the game is flowing.
Yes. Like
if you're dominating them, my point against Ole Miss or Miami was you were whipping their ass on the ground.
Yes.
Like with multiple backs, like in the offensive line was cooking and you would have you had a 13, 14, 15 play drive. You had like four of them or five of them. So obviously you were doing some things right, but it felt like you could have really chopped their legs off if you would have stuck with it. And just coming from a defensive standpoint, there is nothing that is more deflating. There's nothing that is more demoralizing as a man than for another group of men to line up, snap the ball, turn around and hand it off. I know you're running it. They know they're running it. God knows they're running it. And you still can't stop it. Mm-hmm. That is a mental thing. But it's just, I'm telling you, sometimes with offensive coordinators, y'all just, you practiced it. You sat in there and you drew it up and you thought it was going to be great. And everybody's talking about how this is going to hit and this, that, and the other. And you're like, man, it almost feels like if I was the president of the United States, it's hard. I want to use some of our stuff, dog. Well, like, I want to use the invisible helicopter. Yeah.
You're not going to trick play your way to a win over Indiana, right?
Obviously.
But a call is either, to me, the right call or the wrong call for that particular time in the game, regardless if it works or not. Right. And you hit that double reverse pass for a touchdown. I still think you probably should have just run wide zone in this position because the risk of doing that was going to stall your momentum.
Just don't come out in wildcat when it's third and four and you're averaging 7 yards a carry.
That was a tough call.
That's
man.
The one thing.
Here's the thing. If I'm going to go in wildcat, Fletcher's going to be back there getting it.
Yeah.
What do they call it, the Mallycat?
Yeah. It's really not wildcat anymore. We just don't have a quarterback. We're just going to snap. We're going to do the same thing. Like we're running power. It's not wildcat. We just taking out the middleman.
I just don't know if Miami can go 13 and 14 play drives against this Indiana defense.
Like, not
I just,
one way. Not doing it one way.
You're going to have to hit big plays against this Indiana defense. Because
they had four of those against Ole Miss. Four drives over 13 plays.
Yeah. I just don't see how you do that because they're so fundamental in what they do. You're going to have to hit big plays. I mean, you're going to. You're going to have four play, five play drives. And, like, another big thing, a big component in this game is you have to score touchdowns when you're in the red zone.
Facts.
Three points are not going to win you this game. And Indiana's been one of the best in the country on offense and getting 6 points and not three. Miami's defense has been okay. I mean, the second half of the season hasn't been as well. Obviously special teams who can kick a field goal and field position, right? Yeah. Field position is massive in this game.
Well, and I don't think I never ever see fans or really any other analysts make this point. Indiana's got one of the best third down defenses in the country. You want to know why that they're so good on making you methodically go down the field? Because they get you in third down a lot. You know, the more times you're in third down or have to run a third down play, because, I mean, it felt like Miami barely had any third downs on some of those drives.
All their third downs against Ole Miss.
And when they were third down, they were third and ones. Like, you have to get them in third down to stop them. And the more times I get you in third down, the more times I can stop you. That's why at the end of the day, when you look at how many third down snaps this defense has played, it's been really impressive. I got to cough. Somebody say something.
I guess one of the last things I'll say is you're not going to completely turn Indiana into a team they haven't been the entire season, right? Yeah. Too fundamental, too disciplined. But can you take advantage of a break here or there? For instance, you know, we talk about the way Indiana just doesn't fumble the football. I think they fumbled on the 18th play of the season and really haven't lost a fumble since then. But you saw a situation where Mendoza on the scramble, and that's another thing we need to talk about. Anytime there is some conflict for Indiana's offense, Mendoza's legs are able to get them out of that trouble. Scrambled the other night against Oregon. Oregon forces a fumble. An offensive lineman immediately following behind jumps on that. Just speaking about the discipline and how every single person does their job, could you put potentially get a strip sack situation that you are able to jump on top of and then go turn that into points? If Miami's able to do that without shooting themselves in the foot, that's how they're going to stay in this game to me.
Blaine, I know you probably have a little bit more to add. I just again want to make another point. We kind of hit it on the beginning. What I love probably the most about this matchup is Indiana goes about this sociopathically. Like if it looks like there's no feeling. I don't think there's sadness. I don't think there's worry. I don't know if there's joy, to be honest. And it's so impressive. They're basically robots. Like when Mendoza had those headphones on walking in the game the other night, I bet he was just listening to machine noises. Just listening to machines make noises. That's it. He doesn't need music. So Indiana's not going to be intimidated. They're going to come out and do exactly what they've always done. They're going to play discipline. But Miami is not afraid of Indiana. No. They are not afraid of Miami. Is afraid of no one. It's like my bulldog I have. Like, he is not afraid of anything. He's little. He would get absolutely slaughtered by probably 80% of dogs out there, but he does not view it like that. If Godzilla walked up in my neighborhood right now, he would sit his ass on the ground, look up and bark at him and be like, "If you come over here, buddy, you're going to end up getting it." So there is no fear. There is no fear in this game for Miami. So that's what I love. Neither team's scared. Neither team's going to be afraid to go out there and do what they do. That's why this matchup is so juicy, and I can't wait for it. And it kind of pisses me off. It's the last game of the year. But this is this should be the national title game right now, Blaine.
It just feels like if you're Miami, you have to come out and punch first. You have to come out and hit Indiana in the mouth first. Are they going to respond? Probably. But who can get – strike fear in the other opponent first? Who can make the other opponent worry first? Because I promise you, if Indiana comes down and just rolls you down the fields and goes scores a touchdown
or gets a pick six on the first play,
Indiana doesn't need any more hype, right? Trust me, they're gonna be hyped up enough. But if you're Miami, right, I promise you, they bleed, okay? They bleed, but you have to come out and be the first one to throw a punch in this game.
Coney, anything else to add?
I'm really excited for this game. I'm excited to see what Miami, what sort of looks they bring on the defensive side of the football, particularly. We've talked so much about their ability to get home with four, which helps them cover behind that. But if you look at that game against Ole Miss, they're running six up, double mug, bailing Mezidor to the flat, to the boundary. Technically, they're only bringing four, so it's not a blitz, but the way they get to it keeps you off balance. Trinidad Chambliss was having to scramble. Sometimes they were seven up on the line of scrimmage. Again, Keontae Scott, such a playmaker behind that, is able to solve so many problems. He's coming on blitzes a lot. How Fernando Mendoza, as cerebral as he is and with his ball placement in the RPO game, how he handles that is a matchup I just can't wait for.
Yeah, and you can't let Carson Beck beat you with his legs either. I bet Indiana's going to be talking about that probably at length, because Carson has just decided he can run now. He just made the, I'll do it, you know, at the end of the day. But make sure you hit that subscribe button. We cannot wait for this game. We are going to have our prediction episode dropping here in a couple days, so make sure you're locked into that. And obviously, the transfer portal news is insane. Right now, we had an intel update with Pete Nakos from the company we now work for at On3. You need to go check that out. I'm sure we'll have an update at some point this week with all the movement that we've seen and kind of the chaos. But let's just do it, man. Last game of the year. This is it. It's been a hell of a year. We appreciate you guys joining us. I like the chances of me not being happy, but also sad that it's going to be a great game, but it's the last game. We're going. Gone.